Group meeting, Saturday, 16th April, 1983. Those of you who were present last month may recall that we touched upon this point of liberating transcendence out of our existential being. There is a real value in looking at the situation that way, for the simple reason that the only other way we can look at it is in terms of our growth, our fulfillment, and so forth. And our growth and fulfillment is obviously ego-centered. So, if we bend our energies with the driving force behind them of our fulfillment and progress and development and so on, then we are only increasing the constricting power of egoism, not only in us but in our environment. Because each one of us is not a separate individual as such, but is complete, not only related in a superficial manner, but is completely at one in actual fact with the environment. The environment and I are one, all the time. Only the brain is unaware of it, in the case of most human beings. And even in our case, I say even in our case, complementarily, because we are concerned with living the religious life, and we are concerned with living it in such a way that mankind may come to fruition and fulfill the purpose of its existence on this planet. Now, in this task of liberating transcendence out of its existential manifestation as oneself, I, you, etc., you see, an ascesis becomes necessary. An ascesis is a very good Greek word. It means being free of, by allowing it all to drop off, being free of all that is unessential to this liberation. It is our liberation insofar as it consumes us all the time. We get burnt up in it, in the process. It's, as Jesus put it, a fiery baptism. And this fiery baptism, you will find in the Upanishadic teachings, and also in the Buddha's teachings. You remember how he says, when he sits on the banks of the Niranjara River, "I will not rise from this seat until deliverance I have found." That is how the record comes to us. Remember, the record was made by less than Buddhas some centuries after Gautama's death. And I can't help feeling that the words, wonderful as they are, as they stand through the centuries, perhaps in some ways cast a shadow upon the actual intention the form of the intention in the mind of Gautama when he sat down there like that. This determination, this rousing up of virya, energy, tremendous energy, the persistence, the patience, the suffering that the body has to undergo in the whole process. The body at least, also the psyche. No one has recorded that. You see, the cure of sorrow is sorrow. Look, there are two words used, dukkha and shoka. And it is extraordinarily significant that in that autobiographical discourse of the Buddha, I am referring to number 26, the Ariya Pariyesana Sutta in the Majjhima, Gautama uses both words. That has come down accurately enough of his teachings. He uses dukkha, he also uses shoka. Now, what is the difference? Dukkha stands for the totality of sorrow, which means the totality of manifestation, which means all existence. Gautama declared that all existence is suffering, and this is one of the things that has absolutely knocked backwards the bright brains of the scholarly world. They are very, very bright, very, very clever, very, very learned, but not quite wise enough. They have failed to see the real meaning of dukkha as such. They have always interpreted, and here the words are at fault in the presentation of the first truth. Birth is sorrow, illness is sorrow, this, that and that. Well, of course, everybody in the world knows about that and has known about it from 3 or 4 million years ago. There was nothing new or exceptional about it. And what's more, human beings throughout the millions of years before the Buddha had to take it in their stride, whether they wanted to or whether they couldn't. The Buddha was referring to the fact that all existence means specifically, fundamentally, a standing out of origin. Out of what he called the unborn, the unbecome, the unmade. And remember that he said that if there was not that, there'd be no release out of this which is born, become, made. One of the most significant statements, and I can't understand why the bulk of scholars in the world have utterly failed to see the significance of it all. So dukkha, ka is it's the same in the Upanishads. It stands for the infinite, the void. You see, you'll see it in the Chandogya Upanishad. Brahman is prana, life, energy, creative energy. Brahman is ka. Brahman is khang. Ka is the infinite. Khang is bliss, which has no relationship with our words, happiness, joy, and so forth. Bliss also is one of our words, but we interpret it in sensational terms. Not that. Something utterly different. That state of ineffable peace and quiet, which means absolute truth, absolute reality. As in Christian terms, the peace of God which passeth understanding by this brain here, which is quite incapable of plumbing those depths. You see? All right. So, du means that which is spoilt, that which is far from. So, existence, ex out of, sistere to stand, is a standing out of that transcendent absolute, is standing out of. And that is sorrowful. The whole process of manifestation then means pain. It means, because it means restriction in every way. Restriction in terms of form and shape, because origin is formless, shapeless, mindless, in our sense of the word mind, and so forth. All right? And sukha is the personal pain, which the individual, which any bit of manifestation feels, when it discovers that it is far from the infinite, kicked out of heaven. Now, this shoka, this sorrow, which is a profoundly spiritual and psychological sorrow, is the real source of power and urge towards liberation. This sorrow has to be there. If we want to avoid this sorrow, well, have nothing to do with religion. Eat, drink, be merry, and die. A worthless death. A death which is destruction, which is the wages of sin, and which is not the consummator and the transmuter, the one which is the ultimate liberator and perfecter. You see? So, this shoka is the word he uses, the Buddha uses in that discourse. So that sorrow heals the other sorrow, dukkha. Because that sorrow is the power that moves us towards our full ascesis, a getting free of all that hinders, all that makes ill, all that makes ugly, all that prevents transcendence itself from coming to its fruition, its supreme fruition, as manifested through humanity and humanness. How many people in the world manifest the true meaning of human? The blissful creator. The dictionary will tell you, man, the root man, means to think. But when you and I think, it is simply a ceaseless chatter, concerned only with dukkha, the world of dukkha. We can use the words God and transcendence and eternity and all the rest of it. But that thinking is all chatter and self-centered. But if we can think, if we can release thought, the power of thought, in the real way, then that thought is the formative aspect of pure mind, of Buddha mind, or if you're Christian, Christ consciousness. That thought is the formative aspect. And it is that thought which is the instrument, the vessel of this primordial creative energy, which releases cosmos out of chaos. Now you see, if you consider the way the idea of thought power and thinking and so forth has been commercialized. Every day, in every way, I'm getting better and better. I am getting better and better. That means I am becoming more cursed with I-ness instead of with true egohood, limited individuality, indivisibility, holiness. From childhood onwards, we have to grow and realize true egohood, which is the harmonized psycho-physical existential being. And then, don't stop there at 25 or 28 or 30 years of age. It must continue, and that limited individuality, the indivisibility, begins to spread throughout all infinity and in all eternity. So it's a very different thing. And it is precisely that for which the Buddhas and Zarathustras and Krishnas and so on have arisen in the world and successfully demonstrated that this can be done by foolish little mortals like myself. So you see, the process, the method is expounded. Now, I can't help but feel, which of course is now in my old age, up till I was 70, I quite believed in the idea of following the way which was taught. Well, you know, you can't follow the way. The way is not something which is paved, laid down for you by another. The way is your own existential being, that living thing which is burning up all the time. Before it finishes the burning, it rests with you to see what is my special creative contribution to the process of this burning, so that this burning will absolutely purify and release the absolute, instead of just ending up in mere ashes. The organism will end up in mere ashes, yes. But this embodied transcendence, this embodied infinity, eternity, immortality, this is liberated throughout all manifestation. Any one person's achievement, I'm using a bad word, achievement, but you'll understand what I mean. One person's achievement affects the totality, absolutely affects the totality. This is not blind faith. Even science is coming to understand that. Thank God for quantum mechanics. They are beginning to understand all these things also. And if they are beginning to understand all these things, we ought to be very much ashamed of ourselves if we don't make the complementary understanding in terms of the spiritual significance of it all. You see? So the ascesis means a letting go of everything. Cling to nothing, grasp nothing. And in that grasping nothing comes that death which is the great transmuter, the perfecter and the consummator of the whole process. If I were to use theistic language, God in heaven with all his angels will play wonderful symphonies of joy if any one of us realizes this sort of thing. But the whole thing is let go. See what you can let go. That does not mean that supposing you are the possessor of a fortune, that you should throw it away, give it up. Not at all. That fortune and you are one and the same thing. You are the trustee for it. Utilize it perfectly. The whole world is in need of people who can utilize their fortune correctly. And it is because most of those people do not use their fortune rightly, they are the perpetuators of hunger, disease, trouble for so many unfortunate people in the world. Use it rightly. Use it with no self-motive. Don't sign a check for £5 million for something because you will be called Lady so-and-so or Lord so-and-so afterwards. That self-motive will make that £5 million go awry and get misused somewhere. Use it purely. Whatever we have to use with absolute purity. If you are gifted with spiritual insight, true insight, if you have the intellectual gift to present that spiritual insight in a helpful, constructive way to others, then do so, not that you may become the leader of a great movement. You will be a leader if the quality of leadership is strong in you and you so live and act that it functions naturally, spontaneously, without your clinging to leadership or desiring leadership or imposing leadership. What does the whole world of politics do? Look how it imposes leadership. Look at what all the ambitious people, greedy for power, lusting for power do, and see what happens to them. Alexander, 33 only, and he died, silly boy, the way he lived. Take another example, Napoleon. At 52 he was dead, sick in his body and in his soul. Chap called Adolf Hitler, Joseph Stalin, his own daughter finally turned against him, Mussolini, the misuse of power because there's power lust. They had ability, yes, but it was self-directed. Self-aggrandizement. And we can suffer from spiritual self-aggrandizement in a very, very bad way. And it is the worst form of self-aggrandizement because the effect of the release of spiritual energies is tremendously greater than the release of any other form of energy in the world. It's tremendously powerful. Therefore, one of the supreme aspects of this ascesis, this living and thereby living the religious life, is to realize, absolutely realize, for me there is nothing. It has to be truly nirvana. a complete extinction of selfness. Of selfness. The purified self will inevitably be like a star of the first magnitude shining in the heavens. And that star will not be shining up there in space, but will be shining on earth. You won't know it. If unfortunately you come to know it, oh, I am a great star shining here. I'm a TV, like our TV stars and all that crowd of unworthies. You see, if you feel like that, the Lord God says, get down. You'll come to a warm place, but it'll be too hot, you know. Because you'll wake up to it sometime or other. People say, oh, look, there are so many instances, people who have led evil lives, they have had thoroughly evil people, they are happy, they are comfortable, they are well off, and then they die and that's the end of it. It isn't. What happens in those seconds, those fateful seconds, each of which is like an eternity, in fact, before the actual death of the organism? Everything stands out in consciousness then. Too late for remorse. Now's the time. At the appropriate time, do the appropriate thing. When you are a child, shout for sheer delight, play games, take your hoop and roll it along with delight, fly your kite, and so forth. When you are adolescent, something else. When you are an adult, and I was going to say fit for marriage, but in the modern world, who is fit for marriage? A very, very tiny minority. Then, middle age, certain degree of stability, but let not that stability be converted into fossilization, because you will be an influence for evil. Be open. In complete open-mindedness, all through life, which is watchfulness, samasati, in that complete open-mindedness, ready to observe, to think and feel and so forth, you will release from inside yourself a source of inspiration which will affect not only your life for good, for true happiness and peace and all the rest of it, but will affect your whole environment. You know, we don't realize these things. We are such an uneducated lot. And so many thousands and thousands and millions, in fact, are an ill-bred lot. That's the fact of the matter. They are ill-bred because their fathers and mothers were not fit to procreate. They didn't have the rudiments of self-understanding and control and knowledge and so forth to make them fit to bear children and bring them up healthily, happily, and so forth. So you see, this ascesis will release this source of inspiration from within yourself, which will enable you in your inner consciousness to create your own world. And when you create your own world, you'll create your own divine laws which release the right process for that world. Now this people don't know. That is why you cannot realize anything worthwhile by attempting to follow the statements of another person. Consider them, yes, by all means, consider them. Consider them very, very fully and deeply, and don't cease considering them, because after all, they are sources of great knowledge and understanding. And when your own inner consciousness has really touched its own sphere, which is the sphere of transcendence. Consciousness itself is something which we don't know. We know that we are conscious of this, that and the other, which means that there is a duality present. This person is conscious of that piano, that lady sitting there, this gentleman sitting here, and so on and so on. But this is all an otherness in terms of an otherness. When you're really conscious, there is no such thing as otherness present in that consciousness. And then that which you are conscious of will express itself naturally and spontaneously in the right and perfect manner, and that is beauty, that is order, that is harmony, that is the sweetness of life. Every one of us has said, not once but probably several times, I love you. Passionately said, I love you. And meant it then in our state and at our level, we really meant it. But our state and our level and our meaning belong to the realm of disorder, of dukkha. When that inner consciousness has really woken up, and that waking up is a realization of transcendence, has really woken up to love, then your every thought and feeling, your every word and your every action will just, without your brain knowing it or needing to know it, express love in its absolute purity. And in that love, there is no rejection of anything. There is no acceptance of anything in terms of attachment. One can accept many things, and what one accepts many things because there is the attachment, an attraction, an attachment, and so forth. Now there must be none of that. Ananda, the freedom from all grasping is indeed deathlessness. Freedom from all grasping. The existential being, the psychophysical organism, the body and the psychical processes, are absolutely perishable. There is nothing left. That is why I say there is no such thing as the popular belief and the popular conception of rebirth. Because if you look into your mind carefully, you will find that you can't escape identifying yourself with one or all of the different elements which constitute the existential being. Rupa, Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, and Vijnana, discriminative consciousness, which is not that absolute pure consciousness. All this is within the context of mortality. And we identify ourselves with that which is in the context of mortality. A person thinks of himself as a jolly fine athlete and a healthy, lusty lad, and wine, women, song, and eat, drink, and be merry, and all the rest of it is there. All right? When a person grows up and is a little more sensible than that, he identifies himself with his feelings, his thoughts, his ideas, maybe his work, his gifts, his possibilities, and all the rest of it. But all this is perishable. That self is completely perishable. Whereas this innermost consciousness, which is not vijnana, which is the meaning of the Buddha's vijnanam anidassanam anantam sabbatopadam, which is the exact equivalent of the Upanishadic Atma. Pace all scholars to the contrary. You see? That consciousness is not your possession. Vijnana is yours. Sankhara is yours. Sanya, Vedna, and the Rupa is yours. But whatsoever is yours is completely perishable. We must realize that. If we do really see that, not for God's sake, don't believe a word of what I say. Don't believe it. Your beliefs are completely impotent. No use at all. See it for yourselves. Examine it. And be patient. Don't be in a hurry. You know, when Browning wrote, God's in his heaven, all's well with the world, even Browning himself didn't understand what on earth he wrote. I am very much in sympathy with that, because in my little way, there are certain things which I have written, which I am now, I don't know what on earth it implies. But it came, absolutely emerged like that. And so there it was. It is like that. And this supreme consciousness is the thing that will find the release and the perfection. And it will affect all the world. That is how you will be, to use Krishnamurti's words, a benediction to the world in which you live. Thank you, everybody.